basically said he wants to do the same there. And important thing to keep out, neither of those, particularly Chicago, they're nowhere near bankruptcy. They have relatively healthy economies, so you don't even begin to have the case you have in Detroit.
We've been speaking with Dean Baker of the Center for Economic and Policy Research. You can find their work online at CEPR.net. Thank you very much, Dean Baker, for joining us on Counterspin.
Thanks a lot for having me on.
The time is 6:01. Up next, Bread and Roses. Host Della Ray and guests talk about life's transitions.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the 19th year of the Portland Revels. The Portland Revels will perform 11 shows between December 6th and December 15th. That's the Portland Revels, December 6th to the 15th at the Scottish Rite Center in downtown Portland. More information about the show can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO is seeking a station manager to lead our dynamic 45-year-old non-commercial radio station. Ideal candidates will have nonprofit management experience, the ability to thrive and work collaboratively in a decentralized organization, and the ability to delegate, plan, and organize people to meet goals and objectives. If this interests you, please go to kboo.fm/stationmanagerhire2013.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Aladdin Theater, presenting folk artist Christine Lavin and Seattle's Uncle Banzai in the Just One Angel Tour, Friday, December 20th. Doors at 7, show at 8, and tickets and information for Christine Lavin and Uncle Banzai available at aladdin-theater.com.
At the dawn of the day, all the darkened kitchens, the mill of gray, all touched by the radiance that the sun discloses. Oh, hear the people singing, bread and roses.
Welcome, welcome. Welcome to Bread and Roses, feminist news and public affairs. I'm your host, Della Ray, and our engineer this evening is Lee Ann Kranz. Our collective brings you this show every Friday night at 6 p.m. Women have had this forum on KBOO for 35 years. This airspace is here to be shared. This collective, Bread and Roses, is open to new members. If you are a woman in body or spirit, we will help train and support you. Perhaps you want to be in front of the mic, or you would prefer to be behind the scenes. Either way, I so encourage you to reach out to KBOO's volunteer coordinator, Ani Haynes. You can also find us on KBOO's website at kboo.fm/Bread and Roses, or on Facebook at KBOO Bread Roses Women's News. This evening, we are going to be discussing life's transitions. But before we dig in, I want to share something with you. Here's what I believe. I believe that in order to do well, we must first be well. I believe that taking care, the very best care of ourselves, links to better everything. I advocate this message as an author and a host on this show, Bread and Roses. To learn more about my work, I invite you to visit my website, www.delaray.net. Della is with two L's, Ray is spelled R-A-E.net. And again, I mentioned this show tonight, and I'm really excited about it because I ask you to think about life's transitions. That's what we're talking about. What happens when our lives change and we don't know what the next step is? We don't know what to do. We don't know what to expect. I think this subject is very worthy because it's a big piece of self-care. Because when we can figure out that it's okay when we do go through things, it's a good thing. In the studio, joining us this evening is Shari Getz, author and creative soul, and Sarah Reynolds. She has a longtime nonprofit professional background, but she's gone rogue. She's changed it all up. So she's joining us. Shari, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Sarah?
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Nice. So, Shari, just jump right in. Tell us who you are. Tell us a little bit about you.
Okay. Happy to be here with you, and I am happy to be in Portland. I found Portland when I took a road trip with a friend when I was living in Los Angeles in the 90s and decided it was to be my home, but it took 20 years to make that happen. Meanwhile, I did a lot of work in the arts for most of my life, and in Los Angeles, I went to UCLA and started a children's theater where we wrote and performed for kids. Me and my group, Imagination Station. Loved doing that. I worked in commercial production. I've done a little bit of everything. And then at one point, I decided to move back to Texas because mom and dad were aging and could use some help. So I, while I grew up in Houston, the closest I was willing to get to Houston again was Austin. And so I went to Austin where I stayed for 12 years. It was a good choice for me because mom and dad were in Houston, and over those 12 years, they both passed away. So it was an important choice to make. While I was in Austin, I learned to run a nonprofit that was focused on encouraging kids to study science and math, which was obviously a 180 from being in the arts, but it also taught me a great deal. And I was very happy to do that and learned a lot. And since then, I've taught kids acting classes because I feel that that is a rewarding thing to do to build confidence. And I've written for children, both in plays and books. And now I work for Triangle Productions, which is a theater right down the street, www.tripro.org, doing great shows.
Yeah. Thank you for that introduction. Sure. I'm going to jump on over here to Sarah. Give us a little bit about you. But you know what? Wait, Sarah, before I have you do your introduction, I just want to remind our listening audience that, you know, we're really here just talking. Around the table, like three girlfriends, just talking about our journey. So, Sarah, give us a little bit about you.
Okay. I am also a transplant. I moved here in 1992 from the other Portland. And I quickly went into the nonprofit world myself. It was my passion to participate in helping my community. And I found my way into fundraising, and that was the way that I was participating with nonprofits. And I fell in with a great organization, Metropolitan Family Service, and I was doing fundraising for them and really events heavy for a while. And that was both great. I learned a ton, but it was also highly stressful. My husband and I moved away for 2 years in the late 90s and into the early 2000s so that he could get a business degree in Michigan. And when we came back, we had a baby in tow, and I took some time off. I took about 7 years off before getting back into the work world again. And so I went back into nonprofit, but on the other side of the fence. I was really fortunate to have a job land in my lap that was now on the other side of the fence. So I got to do the grant-making side, which was great.
Nice. So we have introductions. We have given our listening audience a chance to know who we are. And now I'm ready to go deeper to talk about your specific life transitions. And Shari, I'm going to go back to you because you mentioned that you were in Austin, and you talked about being there, your parents aging. But I remember when we were getting ready for this interview, and the reason why I just find you so fascinating is to really what you talked about when you're in Austin and what you went through around the loss that you suffered and your job and some other things. So you want to let us in on that?
So having made the choice to transition from living in LA to living back in Texas, other things were on the horizon for me that I couldn't have prepared for. One was running a nonprofit that I was not trained to do, and the other was dealing with aging parents. As that was happening, I was under a great deal of stress at work, as a lot of people are. I was running a statewide nonprofit, and I felt that a lot of pressure was on me to help the organization get out of significant debt and get back on the right track and sort of turn around. After 2 years as an assistant, I became the executive director for seven more. And during the last few years there, I knew I wanted to make a change, but I did not know how. Mm-hmm. I felt not obligated, but I was committed to this agency. I had become a part of the family, and I cared about what we did for kids, K-12 kids across the state. But I knew that I had done everything I felt I could do. Mm-hmm. And but the funny thing about a lot of us is, we don't give ourselves permission all the time to make decisions that we think are good for our health, like you say about self-care. And so life made that decision for me. I had a stomach ache, went to the doctor, and found out that I had bladder cancer. Mm. So that was a real unexpected moment in my life. And it is fine. Everything's fine. It really could have been way worse. All is well in my world, health-wise. But at that time, it gave me permission to say, you know what? You really probably should make a change.
So can I back you up and ask you a question? What made you, I just want to really break this down for our listening audience. What made you go from the associate to the executive director, knowing that it would probably be stressful for you because you weren't trained as an executive director?
I think in the nonprofit world, many people will agree it's boot camp. I don't think a lot of us are trained in the particular jobs we take. Mm-hmm. I know for myself, I wouldn't have sought the job of an executive director because I wouldn't have believed I had the skills to do it. Mm-hmm. A lot of women I hear do think if it's not on the resume, they're not going to shoot for it. But in this case, I had already been the assistant. There were five people working there. Then there were four. Then there were three. Then there were two. Mm-hmm. And that executive director knew we had no money and had a lot of debt, over $200,000 in debt. Mm-hmm. And she said, I'm leaving. There's not enough money. And then the board turned to me and said, well, you can stay or not. It's up to you. Right? You'd have to raise the money and get this thing back on track. And I decided it was something I was challenging myself to do.
Gotcha. Oh, thank you for that.
Sure.
So I'm going to go to you, Sarah, because Shari's story is more, in my mind, and maybe you might disagree, Shari, but your story is more you were thrown into a transition. You were just kind of thrown into it. Whereas Sarah, your transition is more of a choice because you were working at a nonprofit doing funding and helping do grants, and then you decided to do something a little different that you're still thinking about now. Will you share that with us?
Yes, but I need to back up a tiny bit in that. When I went back to work, it was just over 5 years ago now, I had been off for 7 years, as I mentioned, raising two kids. And right before the opportunity came knocking, and it literally did, I was just so fortunate that it kind of landed in my lap, I was beginning a process of talking with friends about what I might do next. And might I go back to school? Because I'm really interested in people's health, their nutrition, and so I was talking with friends who had masters in public health and just trying to get my head around what that would all look like. And I guess I was really thinking that I needed to go back to school, but I was unbelievably daunted. And, you know, again, 7 years off means I've got a mommy brain, and what do I have to offer this world? And all those self-doubting, awful things that you can think of, I was there. And that doesn't mean I was kicking myself all the time. Mostly what I was doing is kind of ignoring the idea after all, because I was really having a hard time facing the true music and figuring out what I was really going to do. And at the time that I said I was, you know, and I was also putting myself off. I'll do that tomorrow. Yeah. I will do that research for myself tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Today I'm changing diapers and making yet another meal or whatever, mm-hmm. which is important. But mm-hmm. So then the job came knocking. And who in their right mind sits on the fundraising side and gets a call to say, hey, would you be interested in running a small private foundation and being able to give the money away? There isn't a nonprofit person alive that I can think of that would say no thank you to that.
Yeah.
So for me, it was easy to just say, you know what? I'm going to go get my legs underneath me again. I do have these skills. I'm going to dust them off. And there was for sure a learning curve there because I was the executive director of the foundation. You know, so what Shari said earlier really resonated with me as well. And I went with it. And it was a great run for 5 years. But now that nutrition door is needing to be opened again. So, and I told my board of directors that that's where I needed to go.
Excellent. So I want to go back to you, Shari. I have a question because you were saying that you felt like you were part of the family, so you just made this decision based on, you know, being part of the family and you want to challenge yourself. But I ask, what part of you, or was there a part of you that you felt like you gave up to make this choice to stay on with this nonprofit? Just really about you.
Well, my life up until this point had been about the arts. And, you know, I was involved in the arts from as early as I can remember. I was like 3 or 4 when I started taking piano. Mom was a dancer. Dad was a photographer. I mean, I was born to be in the arts. But I had toured a theatrical production in Austin around to schools for some time and decided to take a part-time job to help fund my arts career. This part-time job turned into the position of executive director. So at the time that I was asked, do you want to take on this role? I had already given up the theater, but I also was adding something to my life. I did not know about the world of science and engineering. I mean, I loved science, but I really didn't know there was as much of a connection to the arts as I, you know, before this job, I really didn't know about the connection. So I felt like this was adding something to my life as well. Yes, I was letting go of my arts, but I was adding a new world, a world of engineers that I never would have interacted with in my everyday life in the arts.
Did you keep going with the arts in any way behind the scenes?
You know, I really didn't because that job took over my life. I did incorporate it in that I created a program. So it was Texas Alliance for Minorities in Engineering. And part of my love has been about diversity in the world. So this was filling a part of me that I really loved. I created a comic book that helped teach science and math using the graphic arts. And I thought, okay, well, that's a great combination of bringing in some of the creative stuff. And so I tried to, yeah, whatever I could.
So you did continue to find a way to feed your art soul.
However I could incorporate it into the job I did, yes.
Excellent. Yeah. So I want to go back to you, Sarah. First, my question is, how long did you stay with the foundation where you were giving money away?
5 years.
And were you able to feed your love around, you know, wanting to work with people around nutrition? Were you able to keep that alive in any way?
No, I would say that not from the working with people perspective. Nutrition has always been an avocation of mine. And so since I was in my 20s, I read about it a lot. And I love to cook. I love to eat. I think good food is important. I think food has gotten really complicated for people. Mm-hmm. And we have a crisis on our hands and in America with people not knowing sort of how and what to put on the table anymore, I think. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not necessarily, I didn't leave my position so I could go out and save the world, but I do think that just my energy and my enthusiasm around food, I have something to offer there.
Yeah. So you're reading And and you're making conscious decisions about what you are putting on the table. So here's what I want. This is what I'm hoping that the listening audience is picking up, because, you know, we're talking about different life transitions. But both of you are amazing examples of how you were able to still feed something that was so important to you in a way that may not be obvious to anyone else, but it was really important to you. And with that thought, I want to go ahead and go to break. And when we come back, we'll pick up more around the ways that you've been able to feed two things that are so important to you. We'll be right back. We're back. You are listening to Bread and Roses on KBOO FM. I'm your host, Della Ray, and that number I just played for you is called Spirit Horses by Annie Humphrey. Joining us in the studio, Sherry Goetz, author and creative soul, and Sarah Reynolds, a longtime nonprofit person, and, you know, true enough, she's gone rogue, and we're here talking about life's transitions and just what that means. And again, I want to remind our listening audience, Shari, your transition was really more pushed onto you. It was not really a choice that you made. Just life happened to you that caused your transitions. Whereas with Sarah, it's more that your transitions were choices. And before we left for break, we were just talking about our different transitions, your different transitions, and how you were able, even though in your transitions, both of you were doing things that you didn't really feed your soul, but you found ways to make sure your soul was fed by things that you really, really care about. And which I find really interesting that we can find ways to do the things that really feed us. And you were saying, Sarah, that you were reading. I mean, that's just such a simple thing that even though you were working and doing something that you did love, but you were also reading and feeding your soul with something that you're really, really excited about. You want to tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, and I guess I would say, too, that I want to be clear that my job was amazing. I mean, it was such the right thing for me at the right time. I mean, there were so many things that were perfect about it. The hours, the people I worked with, the people I worked for. Mm-hmm. So that was also soul feeding, even though it wasn't that means to an end. And really, I was able to sort of silence that drum beating on the nutrition front, because this was a new and exciting opportunity. And I was learning all the time. There was definitely changes and challenges along the way. So that kept me fed that way. But it was only in the past year that I started that drum was beating much louder.
Mm-hmm.
So... Yeah.
So, Shari, you had some pieces during your transition that really, you know, you had to wake up and make some decisions. You want to tell us more about your experience when you were in Austin and how you ended up coming back out to Portland?
Sure. I think a lot of people I know have deal with their elderly parents, and I was probably ahead of my friends in that my parents had me a little later in life, and so they were aging before a lot of my friends were. So I was going through some of those things, and that doesn't really impact the fact that you have a great job or what you do at work, except for the way it affects you mentally while you're doing your job, right? And so I dealt with those things, I think, as well as anybody can when you have parents that need help and are getting up there. I think the hardest part of the transition, I guess you're getting at, is when I find out that there's a health issue that needs to be addressed. And I don't want it to seem like when you have a health problem that people should just quit their jobs or leave what they're doing, because that isn't, one, it's not necessarily always practical, and two, it's not always possible, and it may not even be the right thing for some people.
Yes, thank you for that.
For me, I had already been trying to make the decision to change paths, and it gave me the permission to do so. I was very lucky in many ways, actually throughout my life, but at this point, it could have been way worse. I did not have to, you know, cancer did not take over my life in any way. There was a short period where I had to deal with it, but I've been really fortunate. It just gave me permission to say to myself, this isn't what you want right now. You need to make some decisions to make these changes happen, and now you have an opportunity to do it. And I think that's what's important, or what stands out to me.
Well, what I really dig on what you're saying is, you know, it's not often practical or possible for people to make a transition. That is just, we can really stop the show now, because that is it, right? I mean, that's what a lot of people are up against. But you also raise a really great point around the permission piece. So I want to ask you, Sarah, when did you feel like you had the permission to make this change? What gave you the permission? I guess maybe the bigger question is, did you feel like you didn't have the permission from inside to make this change? Talk to us about that.
Wow. I don't know, my husband and I talked about it, and my work with the foundation was great, but I started feeling like I wasn't as fresh as I needed and wanted to be for them and for myself. I mean, it was, you know, it was for both of us. I mean, and at the end of the day, I am fortunate that I could make this decision and that I have some time to figure out how I'm going to proceed next.
That's good. And so back to you, Shari, what mattered to you the most when you realized you needed to make a transition? What mattered? What was bubbling to the very top?
You'd asked earlier, did I let go of the arts when I started working, you know, exclusively with TAME? And my answer has to be, really, I don't think anybody who has a creative passion in life lets it go completely. I had a piano. I played my piano. That was my therapy. There were always ways I engage with the arts, even if I'm not doing it as much of a hobby as I had before or as a career. But
What changed? I mean, what happened? Where did you say, okay, what mattered most? I know you're going through the process. You had cancer. You were working for this organization. It was stressful. You had some things going on with your parents. What was that moment where you said, this has got to stop? And you said you moved out to Portland.
Once I decided to leave TAME, I became a consultant. I decided I can work with a number of nonprofits if I take jobs that are specific to what I'm looking for, and I think I could financially do this for myself. I had gotten to a point financially where I was able to take a break from full-time work, and I did find wonderful consulting jobs in a variety of nonprofits, and it really fed my soul, and that gave me the time to actually deal with my mother, who had now at this point gotten very ill. And so Mom didn't know about the whole cancer thing. That was actually something I kept to myself and my brothers, but that change made everything else that I had to deal with possible. I dealt with my health stuff, I dealt with Mom's stuff, family stuff, and I had consulting work that gave me the time to do what I needed to do.
So from what I hear you saying is, so you, as long as the financial piece was very important to you, so as long as you were able to, you know, keep some financial stability going, then you felt like you could keep yourself going and leverage your art in ways that you could possibly fit it into your life. Is that what I hear you saying?
Yeah. I mean, that's when I gave myself permission to teach acting again, mm-hmm. to teach kids acting. Mm-hmm. I made a studio in my house. That was when I gave myself permission to start writing again for children.
Mm-hmm.
Those are things that, because I had the financial piece in place, I could put my energy into again. So, yes.
Okay. Then I have another question. Okay. Tell us about the transition from Austin to Portland. I think that was just really big and so profound when you talked about that.
You know, it's funny. I had mom had passed away, and it was probably 2 months later. We're still wrapping up all the stuff. When your second parent passes away, then there's some finality to all of the home stuff. And mm-hmm. we were dealing with that. And a friend of mine from LA called me and said, "Whatever happened to that idea of yours living in Portland?" And it surprised me. It was out of the blue, because for so long I had made the decision I had to go to Texas. I had to be in Texas with mom and dad. So I was really pleased when she reminded me that there was something else I could now put my energy behind setting as a goal. And that's what I did. Mm-hmm. I'm, again, really lucky that I didn't have reasons that I had to stay in Texas. I could go. I didn't have a full-time job anymore. I could just pick up and go. So it took me about 8 months. I put my house on the market to lease it, and I moved, and my cousin here, who lived in Portland, said, "Come on, move to Portland." And I said, "I can't move there without a job and a place to live." And he goes, "Sure you can. No one here works. It's like Star Trek." And I was like, "Okay."
Nice. So that brings, both of you have said, it's almost like you're ahead of me here. Both of you have said, you talked about, you know, how other people influenced you making a transition. Sarah, you talked about how you visited with other people that had masters around the field you want to go into. So I throw this question back out to you, and I'll start with you, Sarah. How much of other people's opinions weighed in on your transition?
Not that much.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that more than anything, I finally had the confidence and sort of my own wings underneath me to believe that I could step out and try something different. I don't know. I think I sort of also thought that it's the right time in my life to make a transition before somebody considers me washed up and then I'm too old to make that change in my life, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I have friends that have nutritional backgrounds and mm-hmm. things, and they've been helpful. But I would say that mostly I'm still kind of winging this. Mm-hmm. So I'm working on honing my message and what I think I ultimately want to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do you mean when you say you're winging it? Where are you at in your process? Are you, you know, do you have ideas written down on a piece of paper? Or is this something you really want to do? Have you even thought about when maybe you might do it? I mean, just whatever comes up, let it come out.
Yeah, no, I mean, I've, my process is a lot like when you first get out of college. It's like you just start networking with people. And because this field is so different, that is one of the things that I'm both good at and need to do. So it takes some courage, again, to step out and do that, because, again, my message isn't quite as tight as I would like it to be. But I also know that that comes with the more networking you do, the tighter your message becomes, because you start getting ideas from other people, what they do, what you like from that, what you don't like from that. And so you're constantly rehoning your message, I think, through the networking process. So that's – and I'm just sort of beginning that piece.
Yeah. So let me throw another question out to both of you, and I'm going to throw it back to you first, Shari. How have you grown? And you don't have any – at any point in your process of your transitions, how have you grown, and or what might have slowed you down? What – not asking you to go back and ask the question of what you should do differently. Not at all. How have you grown, or what has kind of slowed you down? Either one or both.
I think starting a life in a different city and building a social and a professional network is not easy. I've done it a few times now. and having, you know, moved to Austin and then to LA and then back to Austin and now to Portland. So I think that was harder for me now than it was when I was 20, probably.
Why? Why was it hard?
I think getting into social groups when you're 20 is a lot different than when you're not 20. Mm-hmm. And by that, I mean over 40, I guess. But I think people here are great. They're very welcoming and friendly. But it's still different when you're at the age where people have families and that's their priority. So social circles are a little harder to tap into. But I think that has been a challenge. The thing that I'd say I am proud of, besides setting a goal and actually following through with it, is believing in myself and saying I have the capability. I have developed quite a good skill set. Mm-hmm. I am marketable. There are few jobs out there, but somebody's going to find what I have to offer good and worthwhile and helpful for their agency. And I was very lucky I started volunteering for All Classical Radio and did some contract work with them and then found out about Triangle Productions. And so I would say it's very challenging to start in a new place, but I'm proud that I was confident enough to step out of my comfort zone, walk into places I did not know, with people I didn't know, and say, I think I'm somebody you should talk to.
Sarah, what about you?
I'm similar in that I do feel really good about the resume I have, whereas when you're 20, you have no resume. Mm-hmm. No offense to those who are seeking out there. But I mean, I have some really good skills too to offer. And while I don't have an RD, a registered dietitian certificate, you know, underneath my belt yet, and it remains to be seen whether or not I will go back to school, I know that I still have skills to offer organizations that are doing things in the field of nutrition. Mm-hmm. Also, when you asked me about my process, the one thing that I did this fall that I've already signed up to do again, which I'm really excited about and loved, was I now volunteer for the Oregon Food Bank, and they have a program called Cooking Matters, and that helps adults and sometimes families. In my case, I had an adult group of lower income individuals who were looking to improve the way they cooked and prepared meals for themselves and for their families. Mm-hmm. And that was such a great, it's an amazing model. It's a national model that's, it was created through an organization called Share Our Strength, but Oregon Food Bank does it here. And it's a 6-week class and it's great fun.
Yeah. So, well, and again, I just can't say enough what I love about both of your transitions, although they're so different. Both of you, and I just really hope that our listening audience hears this as well. You know, you're doing little things. You're not trying to, you know, eat the entire elephant. And one of the things that I always, as you both know, I advocate self-care. And both of you are doing what you can do and not beating yourselves up for it. But I do want to ask you, share a scary moment. Shari, share with us a scary moment or a moment where you're like, what am I doing?
You mean since the transition?
Yes, or during the transition.
Well, I mean, I think the scariest moment for anybody suffering a health crisis is being in the midst of it. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you, having been there now, that sitting in a chair with a needle in your arm at MD Anderson is probably the most scared I've ever been. And I hope to never have to be that scared again.
Yeah.
So yeah, that'll bring it down. But that's sure. That's pretty scary. Mm-hmm. I don't think everything has been up from there.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Sarah, how about
Can't
you?
Can't compete with that.
Sorry, that's a pretty
don't
down
want,
moment.
Don't want you to.
I would say, again, I mentioned it earlier, that my scariest piece is that my message is still not defined the way I want it to be. Yeah. And that process is admittedly scary, but it's also what drives me to want to, you know, pick up the phone for that next informational interview or whatever. I think that, and while I'm still early in those stages, and it still makes me get a little jittery to think about sending that email or making that phone call to that person, it's an important piece. It's sort of double-edged. Mm-hmm. It's invigorating and it's terrifying at the same time.
Yeah, but I'm looking for something deeper. I'm looking for when you decided that you were going to leave this amazing paying job did you have a moment of self-doubt, and what was that like? Or was it just like, I'm leaving and I know I've got this, and
every
you're
day
on the next.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I have likened it to jumping off a cliff. And it's scary, but it's also, I know it's the right thing for me to do because I want to do it so badly. So, but I haven't, I mean, any other true terror I can't actually give you.
I do want to add that I think for me, I was a very responsible person, and I always had to have a job and pay my bills and take care of everything. And for me, since I was 16 years old, there wasn't a time that I did not have a full-time job or a plan or a, you know, an actual plan in place. So when I made that decision for me, there was a freedom to it. Mm-hmm. It was a fascinating feeling, really, because I didn't know what was going to happen, but I wanted to experience it. And I think not everybody can and not everybody gets to, but I really needed it and wanted it.
That is truth right there. You are listening to KBOO Bread and Roses. I'm your host, Della Ray. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. We are back. You are listening to Bread and Roses on KBOO FM. Joining us in the studio is Shari Gantz and Sarah Reynolds, both going through life transitions, different types of transitions, but really rich nonetheless. And I just cannot thank you both enough for being here. Before we left for break, but I guess I should tell you who that was. We were just playing. It's Annie Humphrey and the number Justice Hunters is what we just played when we're at break. But before we left, we were talking about the freedom that comes along when you're making a transition. You know, we covered that it's scary and there's things that comes up, but there's a freedom that comes with life transitions. And again, I really want to bring our listening audience around that and just say that we absolutely recognize that life's transitions aren't always easy. They're not always practical, and they're not always possible. But we want to talk about today that they do happen and ways that we can move through them, feelings that we have, doubts that come up. Shari, you're shaking your head yes. Do you have a point? I mean, is there something that you're thinking about?
I think it's interesting when you think of transitions, whether they're planned or not, they're always there. I mean, losing your parents is a transition. It's mm-hmm. You go from being a kid of, you know, being a child to not. And so that four-year period where I went from dad to mom, and I think it's interesting that that was a transition within the transition, you know?
Mm-hmm. So, you know, you just brought up a really great point. I saw an article in the Huffington Post by Carolyn Gregor, and it's called Five Tips for Getting Through a Major Period of Transition. And she quotes in her article David Foster Wallace, who said, "Everything I've ever let go of has claw marks in it." And the article goes on to say, growing up is all about learning to leave some things behind in order to embrace the new. Dealing with an unsettling transition may not be easy, but there are ways to keep your sanity intact and to turn the challenges into opportunities for growth. There's 5 points that this Huffington Post article points out. And one of them is accept change, let go of the desire to live in the past. 2, find the time for reflection, if it's long walks or a therapist or talking to a trusted person. 3, take it one day at a time. Set up small, attainable goals. Let go of speculation and anxiety. I just love that. Let go of speculation and anxiety. 4 is find a mentor, perhaps someone that has gone through a like transition. And then 5 is think positive, see opportunity for growth. And, you know, and here's what I believe in and what I think about self-care and what I hope to deliver through these shows that, you know, I put on the air is that whether we're talking about life's transitions, whether we're talking about mental health, whatever we're talking about, I just believe there are core ways to move through the world that help us no matter what, and which is, it goes back to self-care. And these last 5 points that came from this article out of the Huffington Post, I just believe that that just really feeds our self-care. What do you guys think? I mean, no matter what's going on, you know, and to me, let go of speculation and anxiety. I think you can just send that anywhere in your life, regardless of whether you're going through a transition or not. But you're shaking your head. Yes, Shari, what do you say?
Well, it's interesting. I think for me, one of the ways I dealt with a transition or a loss was I lost my dog, and I had gotten my dog when I actually wanted to quit smoking, and I decided my way of doing it was to get a dog. Mm-hmm. I had never owned my own dog, and my parents had pets. I had cats, but I never had a dog. So I decided this dog would take my mind off of quitting. I could use that energy, and it worked. I quit, and I had this dog throughout a lot of these changes, and then I lost her. My way of dealing with that loss was to write my first children's picture book about my dog. And so mm-hmm. I think that's funny that for me as a creative person and as a writer, that's what I needed to do.
Yeah. So, Shari, maybe I have this wrong, but so you lost your mom, your dad, and your dog.
That is correct.
What was the time span?
I think that was all in the four-year period there. I had 2008, 2011, 2011. Yeah, actually, a lot happened between 2008 and 2011.
Yeah, I'd say. So yeah. Where did that fall into you having bladder cancer and moving out to Portland?
Dad passed away in 08. I got diagnosed in 09. Mom died in January of 11. Lady died in the summer of 11. I moved in the fall of 11.
So transitions for you, is that what you do? Do you just want transitions?
I'm sorry. Well, what?
No, I mean, that's a lot. I mean, either one of those pieces in your life are transitions that were put upon you. Those weren't things that you asked for.
That's true. I mean, leaving the job in 2010, mm-hmm. I chose to do that.
Right.
I didn't have to. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think a lot of stuff happened at one time. That is true. I don't think we all plan for things to spread out nicely when we can handle them all well. But sometimes that's the way life happens.
Yeah. Well, you're sitting here, you're happy, you're jovial, you're warm and wonderful, you're doing your art, you're over at Triangle doing yeah. amazing things. Give the listening audience, tell us, how did you think positive? What did you do? How did you cope?
Some people don't have time to deal with the loss of their parents the way I did. Dad had been sick for several years, so there was a period of mourning that I think we do automatically when someone's getting sicker and sicker. Mm-hmm. And I think the same for Mom. So we, in a way, were prepared for those losses, and they were in their 80s, so yeah. We are very fortunate.
Yeah.
The dog was not a young dog. It wasn't a shock that she'd passed away. Health does change as we get older. So, I mean, I guess I'm saying it's not that they're not things that are difficult to deal with. They pretty much happen to all of us.
Yeah. And it sounds like you have a really practical approach, though, right? Wouldn't you say you have a practical approach?
I think you do. Thank you.
Sarah, I would like to talk to you a little bit more about your transition, because again, to me, and it just feels more like, you know, your choice. You're just saying, okay, I'm doing this. I'm going to move to this. Not saying it's easy, but it does sound like you apply more to the step number 3 from the article that talks about set up small attainable goals. Would you say that's a part of what you're doing or what you want to do?
Yeah. I guess I've always been very goal driven. So in some ways to, at least in my younger years, I was a competitive swimmer. So I was always setting goals. And that was something that just kept me moving forward all the time. It was just, I loved challenging myself. And I guess I'm channeling some of that youth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's different for sure. So I think that really it's exciting to take a passion. I mean, my fundraising career, I was very passionate about, and same on the grant making side. But this is a new passion that I want to honor and figure out how I can put it to work. Mm. And so I'm excited about that.
Excellent. There's a quote I want to share with you by Elizabeth Lesser, and it's from Broken Open, How Difficult Times Can Help Us Grow. And the quote says, "How strange that the nature of life is change, yet the nature of human beings is to resist change. And how ironic that the difficult times we fear might ruin us are the very ones that can break us open and help us blossom into who we were really meant to be." That's again by Elizabeth Lesser. I want to throw a question out to you. What do you say to people who are in the midst of a transition and they don't know what to do? What do you say, Shari? I'll start with you. Well, actually, and I want to say, be a little bit more clear. They don't know what's next. They're in a transition. They don't know what to do because they don't know what's next. What do you say to that?
So, excuse me. So they don't know what's next. Given a circumstance like I've been through, mm-hmm. where you don't know what's next. I jumped to things that I had some control over, like mm-hmm. quitting smoking mm-hmm. or writing a book. For me, those transitions are, I set a goal, like you say, Sarah, and I'm glad when I follow through with that goal and I give myself the confidence I need to do that. Mm-hmm. But when it's a transition that you don't know what to do, I think you have to just trust yourself that you'll take the steps you need to take to get through it. I think it's interesting that how differently we all react to things. I mean, I do kind of laugh my way through life. It doesn't mean I'm always laughing. It just means I prefer to look at the bright side yeah. as much as I can. That doesn't mean everything is bright.
Right.
It just means that's my natural way of dealing with any obstacle is to yeah. laugh. And
yes.
it keeps me going. It works for me.
Yes. And I also want to clarify, it doesn't matter whether you have plans or goals or not. No one has control over what's happening or what's going to happen,
yeah.
no matter how much planning or whatever it is you do. So I don't
okay.
mean to leave
right.
you or the listening audience with, oh yeah, so if you do this, you'll know what's going to happen, because
gotcha.
Nothing's guaranteed to either one of us ever. But I did want to pull out what you did a beautiful job of just talking about how you handle your transition and how what you would suggest to someone else. And I really appreciate that. Sarah, what do you say to that?
I think that as I age, I am constantly reminding myself that taking life day by day is really important. I used to worry a lot about a lot of things. And I don't worry like I used to, because I guess I realized that I guess I used to be a control freak, and I won't lie and say that I don't still have some of that in me, but I think that I'm getting more okay with the surprises. I mean, I do like surprises, but the point is that tomorrow, I don't know what tomorrow is going to be like, mm-hmm. and I can plan to a degree, but I have to find within myself the ability to say that I'm okay with whatever good or bad surprises might also show up that day. And I'm also getting better, although it's very difficult, at not kicking myself with the shoulda, coulda, wouldas that Della is so good at preaching against.
Yes. Oh, you.
So I really, that's going to be my lifelong journey, because yes, there's a lot of shoulda, coulda, wouldas that I constantly punish myself for. But right now, with the way I'm proceeding on my transition, I'm not kicking myself for not doing certain things on certain days, because I know I am going to do it. Mm-hmm. And life throws wrenches, and I've got a few that I'm stepping over right now in order to get to this end. Mm-hmm. So I'm a little bit delayed in some of the things that I might like to do on this quest, but that's okay. I'll get there.
There it is, right? And thank you for the shoulda, woulda, couldas. That, though, they need to go away. Shoulda, wouldas, couldas. That was yesterday. There's nothing you can do about that. But I do have a question for both of you, and I think it's huge, and it's around passion. I do want to say one of the reasons why I wanted to have this show today is, you know, about the transitions. I'm in transition. I feel like that's, you know, a lot of people are. I mean, I just took on a job that I haven't been in an office for over 13 years. So
wow,
making that transition to be in an office full time, huge transition. And I'm still thinking, what am I doing? But I love the work, but I'm thinking, what am I doing? But the other piece of that is my passion is around self-care, being on the radio show and inviting people like yourselves to tell real stories about what's really happening with people. So with that, I want to ask both of you to please share with us what would you say to somebody who doesn't know what their passion is and they're not sure how to access it? What would you say, Shari?
I think there are a lot of people like that. And I think I'm lucky that I'm willing to take some chances. I like to, go to meetings and take part in learning opportunities, and I'm okay being alone. So that helps me engage in a new community like Portland, so I can find what I might like and where I might belong and who I might want to get to know more. And I think I would suggest to people to try and step out of that comfort zone a little bit and try new things, because that's the only way I can think of that gives you a sense of what really resonates with you.
Did you have to try new things to realize art was your love?
I'm always trying aspects of art. I'm making facial cleansers. I'm creating things all the time. Mm-hmm. I think, yeah, I do test myself to see what really I like to do. And I have to find a place in a theater or an arts organization that where I feel I can contribute significantly. So, yeah, I mean, I'm lucky. I'm very lucky I found a place.
Sarah, what say you?
I can't imagine that there's anybody who doesn't have at least one passion that resonates with them. Though it's really hard for me to think about.
Yeah.
I think that, because I think if you're willing to look at yourself, and maybe that's the scary part for some people, is to sort of stop and say, what am I good at? What was I once good at? What do I like? What don't I like?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, passions come from those very simple things.
Yes, for sure. Thank you for that. And I agree. I think, you know, simplicity, simplicity, simplicity. Can you believe that our time is up? Didn't it go by fast? I told you it would.
Yeah, it did.
So I must wrap up, and I'm going to launch right into it. Our collective brings you this show every Friday night at 6 p.m. Women have had this forum on KBOO for 35 years. This airspace is here to be shared. This collective, Bread and Roses, is open to new members. If you are interested, please, I encourage you. This is the only place to be, community radio. It's where it's at, I promise you. Contact KBOO's volunteer coordinator, Ani Haynes. You can also find us on KBOO's website, kboo.fm/breadandroses, or on Facebook at KBOO Bread Roses Women's News. I thank my guests, Shari. I thank Sarah. I mean, just amazing. Thank you so much for showing up. And I also thank my mentor, Lee Ann Kranz. She's our engineer for this evening. She took such great care of us in the engineer booth. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Della. This was wonderful.
So glad you enjoyed it. And as you know, I advocate a message of self-care. And I want to leave you with this. Dear listener, dear people, now is the time to take the very best care of ourselves all the time and everywhere we go. No exceptions. Thank you for joining us and be well.
As we come marching, so many women dead. We cry through our city, their ancient call for bread. Our stomachs are empty, but our hearts are hungry too. Oh, hear the people singing, bread.
KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. We are listening to the end of Bread and Roses. It is 7:01 right now, and we are about to listen to Heart Knock Radio, so stay tuned and keep it locked.
KBOO is seeking a station manager to lead our dynamic 45-year-old non-commercial radio station. Ideal candidates will have nonprofit management experience, the ability to thrive and work collaboratively in a decentralized organization, and the ability to delegate, plan, and organize people to meet goals and objectives. If this interests you, please go to kboo.fm/stationmanagerhire2013.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to help co-sponsor the Triangle production of American Fiesta, starring Gary Wayne Cash, a witty, hopeful tale of imperfection and acceptance. American Fiesta will take place at the Sanctuary at Sandy Plaza, 1785 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. This Triangle production will run from November 29th through December 22nd. More information about this KBOO-sponsored event may be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
¶¶